Hey, welcome to Product People. Thanks for listening. We're going into part two of our interview with Noel Talk. He built a SaaS app on top of WordPress. And in part one, we talked about what was behind that. And in part two, we talk about how that actually worked out, how the app's doing, what challenges he had along the way, what advice he would give to someone trying to build their own SaaS app. He also has an interesting perspective on consulting and building an app at the same time. So keep listening. This show would not be possible without some really generous sponsors. Every time you visit a sponsor or thank them on Twitter, you really help the show out. So if you've got some time, go and check out these guys on the web, sign up for an account, and give them some thanks on Twitter. The hardest part about online advertising is figuring out what works. No Ads reveals your competitors' campaigns, showing you exactly what's working for them. You get to see their successful ad copy and ad placements, keywords, and more. Go to productpeople.tv/ads and sign up for a No Ads account. If you're trying to set up an online store, you need to use Shopify. I've tried setting up dozens of online stores for clients, and there's always so many headaches. Payment gateways, multiple currencies, taxes, shipping rates. It's just a mess. Shopify solves all these problems for you. It's well worth it to sign up for an account. Go to productpeople.tv/Shopify, Shopify, and get a 14-day free trial. And Sprintly's been there from the beginning, perfect for teams of three or more people. Sprintly is the easiest way for managers and developers to track the software development process. You and your team can try Sprintly for free by going to www.sprint.ly. When you're ready to sign up for an account, I'll get you 10% off. Just use the code PRODUCTPEOPLETV2013. Okay, and how big is the team right now?
Well, the thing is, the Happy Tables as a product is part of the Human Made company. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, you know, we're a team of eight or so, and whenever we have some downtime, we work on products.
Okay.
I happen to always be on the product side, so I'm not only working on Happy Tables, but I'm also working on WP Remote and Backup WordPress, which are two other products that we have. So basically, we just rotate through developers when they have downtime, when they're interested in working on something. It's all quite flexible, and I guess it's a pretty fun work environment for anybody that's on the team.
Yeah.
And just because there's so much diversity.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of people that are in that place. They're doing consulting, especially maybe WordPress consulting.
It's all WordPress consulting, yeah.
And so what can people expect? Like, in terms of income, does products provide half your income?
No. It certainly less, because we have such a good consulting business. The thing is, consulting is a good gig. Mm-hmm. If you're someone that already has the energy and the passion to create a product and to ship it and to see it through, you know, chances are you're probably hardworking, I'd like to say reliable, you'd probably make for a good consultant. Mm-hmm. And at that, rate, you'd probably be making, a decent daily figure, mm-hmm. Especially if you throw in some personal branding and, you know, you take care of your activities and you make sure you increase your rates. There's definitely a safe play to be had there, whereby you will be financially successful for, you know, a long time to come.
Yeah.
The product stuff is always a gamble, regardless. Like, you know, the first product you'll release will probably be, you know, not what you expect financially, but it's pushing you and it's challenging you in terms of how you think and what you, you know, the original preconceptions you had about creating a product sort of are all torn down, and you build new ones just for them to be torn down again. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's a great learning process, as opposed to maybe consulting, where you really need to consistently get better and better clients or larger clients with more demands to sort of meet that challenge.
Mm-hmm. And so you like this mix, because some people say, you know, you got to go all in on products, but it seems like you like doing both.
Well, I'm all in on the product side of the business.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean,
the partnership is working well though, but having a company where there's consulting revenue coming in and there's product income coming in.
Yeah.
And
we're having a lot of fun with it. That's the thing, you know. Ultimately, you know, you have to figure out what your goals are in terms of where do you want to be in 10 years, 20 years, whatever. You know, do you want to be fighting between, you know, your the difference between $100 million and $101 million in terms of salary? Or, you know, do you still want to be creating cool shit on a daily basis, working with a great team?
Mm-hmm.
Not everything has to be, you know, front page TechCrunch material.
Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about some of your preconceptions that kind of got torn down after you'd launched the product. Can you share some of those? What were some things?
Build and they will come. I think that's a classic, like, hole that everybody just falls into.
Yeah.
You know, you got the great idea and you've executed it well, or you think you have at least, and you just think that, oh, okay, you know, like, we got this great product, let's put it out there, people will come. And to be fair, we haven't done that much more marketing at all for Happy Tables. We've just gone about it in a smarter way, which is, you know, help bring in a consistent amount of traffic on a daily basis without having to pollute the web with more advertising or, you know, try to send cold tweets or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically just adding noise on top of noise. I think we've had a quite good organic response to the activities we've built around Happy Tables.
And what are those? Like, how are you bringing in more traffic?
So one of the things we did early on was build the betterrestaurantwebsites.com. It's a pretty tacky domain name. But if you think about it, Happy Tables itself doesn't have the word restaurant or websites in it.
Mm.
So that was something where we're like on, you know, at the beginning, we're on page 4 or 5 for results like restaurant websites. But then when we created betterrestaurantwebsites.com, which is basically a collection of posts on how to create a better restaurant website, and, you know, it's all free and all that kind of stuff. It just has a note there that we've built it. We built that page.
Hmm.
We just get a lot of referral traffic from that, for one. That's been really fun. When we launched that, it got retweeted around quite a lot, which was great. Sort of feedback was really positive there.
Mm-hmm.
That adds a lot to your, you know, your long-lasting brand, if you want. It shows that there's more to your business than, you know, just trying to pump out code and try to sell it as quickly as possible. So that was one thing that was really well received. And I think it still ranks like number 3 or 4, you know, now for just restaurant websites as a keyword.
And what percentage of your organic traffic would come from something like that?
Probably like 15%, 20%.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we'll get like another like 20% from links at the bottom of free websites that we have. So, you know, some users will be on our free plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a free plan, we believe in helping out restaurants at the very beginning, when they literally have no cash, or restaurants in third world countries that may not need to use all the features that we have. They can go ahead and just use Happy Tables for free. And when I say free, I mean free. You know, you can connect your domain to it if you have one. So that doesn't come at an extra cost. But at the bottom of all those pages is, you know, a powered by Happy Tables sign. And that really helped us out a lot. I think the case study from that came, or the inspiration for that came from Carbon Made. Do you remember that site?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that they did. And that worked out really well for them. And I pretty much just took that over one-to-one back then. And that's just been a great source of traffic, because that's the one channel that just has the highest click-through rate from landing page to signing up for just an account.
Mm-hmm. And so you said 15% comes from betterrestaurants.com, 20% comes from that footer link. And where's the rest of that traffic coming from?
It's just a mix of like referrals from websites we're just mentioned on, direct traffic or just organic traffic. We still rank really well for like WordPress related keywords, which is a bit awkward since we don't have WordPress copy at all on our website.
Yeah.
It's all gone. So it's quite interesting that we still come up for WordPress restaurant theme and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And harder a segment to sell to.
Yeah. And do you have a sense of what kind of channel converts the best?
Yes. The people that come in through the link, the Powered by link.
The footer?
The footer link. Because they've seen the product at that point. They see what it is. They're like, okay, this is this. Maybe they're on a mobile device. Maybe they're on a tablet. They'll see that it's responsive, that it all works. So that partial win is already there. So they can just click on that link and, just sign up and give it a play around themselves.
Yeah.
So they already have that sort of buy-in, if you want. I mean, obviously the click-through rate on that link itself is ridiculously low, simply because, most people that visit a restaurant website are interested in its food and not the way it's built.
That's right. Yeah. And what's a good conversion rate for people that do click? Who clicks on that footer link and actually signs up? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, so the ones that click on a footer link and then just sign up for a site, so we're not even talking like paid or not paid because we haven't even bothered tracking that yet.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked, it was 37%.
Okay, wow. So quite high.
Much higher than any other sort of figure we have from anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, like something like Google or whatever, just like pure organic traffic, depending on the country, will range anywhere from like, I'd say 8 to 15%, maybe a little higher.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you a couple more questions. First, I want to talk to you about doing business in Europe. And then I think we'll leave the audience with some of your best tips for people that want to build their own products.
Yeah, so, sounds good.
So let's talk about you're running a business in Switzerland. The rest of your team is in the UK. Are most of your customers in Europe?
No, the majority of the customers are in English-speaking countries. So basically, we have a number in the U.S., and then a smaller component in the UK, and then an even smaller component in Australia. About it right there. And then it's just like the spread sort of mix around the rest of the world. Sometimes we get little pockets like in Brazil or Germany, which is cool too, but it's really like an English-speaking thing.
Yeah, and has that been challenging to run the business from Switzerland?
There's pros and cons.
Should I move to Zurich and start my next product there?
No, not if you're not. I mean, the thing is like the whole company and everything, even Happy Tables is incorporated in the UK.
Okay.
Simply because it's just that much cheaper to do.
Yeah.
And we also just had better access to services. I mean, one of my reasons for doing it in the UK to begin with was just I knew that it'd be easier down the line to also just tap into third-party services that we may want to use. And case in point, we now use Stripe, which no one else in Europe can use at this point because it's only in the UK.
Gotcha.
So that's good. But on the other side, you're quite restricted from the whole sort of the U.S. market and the biz dev that goes on there. If you're living in San Fran or you're living in New York or whatever, you'll probably just have many more opportunities to come in contact face to face with people that can provide distribution.
Yeah.
Because on our side, we have a white label program. So the cool thing about that is that a third party, another company that maybe does reservations or does online ordering, can take our product, integrate it into theirs, and completely run that as if it was their own. Which is cool because, you know, then, you know, the reservation link and all that kind of stuff is just inside the website from the first minute. But yeah, I mean, on the other side, the pros to being here is obviously that we have a much better chance at trying to go after the long tail that's present in a lot of the smaller countries. You know, I mean, Europe is very broken up into a lot of different areas, different languages. So there's an opportunity there to hone in on those niches and just try to execute them very well in terms of providing the right language sets, maybe providing local integrations for reservations or online ordering. And that's where we have access that maybe a player that's focused much more on the U.S. and is based out of the U.S. would just, that would never come into their sphere of influence or, you know, their site at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I went to France probably 5 years ago, and there was a lot of French restaurant websites that were still on Flash. So there's lots of opportunity.
It's just everywhere. I mean, the whole Flash thing is just crazy. People still ask for it today. and then they're fine having a separate mobile website. And
yeah,
you know, that's probably one of the larger challenges, you know, for a company like Happy Tables beyond location and the sort of, location, is really trying to educate the user as to why they need Happy Tables in the first place.
Hmm.
You know, like, how are you going to start that argument? How can you sell the advantages of Happy Tables in one or two sentences?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's quite different.
Yeah. Well, Noel, let's leave our listeners with some of your best tips or things that they should consider as they're thinking about launching their own product. What would you say to someone that's just getting started?
Do not use Twitter Bootstrap.
Oh, really? Why is that?
I'm one of the first, I always get criticism for it too. I don't know. I like it. I like the concept of it, and the theory behind it's great. But I think in practice, it's been used for such like early MVPs
mm-hmm.
that it's almost become, you know, a stamp of the quality to expect behind the app.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you think it's getting a reputation now as kind of like just an early stage, like if you see Bootstrap, it's like an early stage, not quite fully baked application.
Yeah. I mean, how hard is it to create a front end? You know, if you've already created an entire app, HTML without CSS is really responsive.
Yeah.
So, you know, all you have to do is add a couple, a little bit of styling here and there and come up with something that's more or less straightforward. And I think you can have a more compelling design and probably user experience too. And, you know, just going right into the full load of Twitter Bootstrap.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Personal opinion, though. And I mean, I know people have all sorts of varying stuff on it. Obviously, if your app has a live demo, which, you know, you can just click on and then you see the entire app and that's mind-blowing, then great. Then it doesn't even matter what you use. But I mean, if your app is behind 2-3 registration fields, then, you know, maybe you should have your own look and feel to it.
Yeah.
And if that means you have less stuff on your website, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah. No, I like that perspective. Is there anything else? Any other tips that you'd give someone who's just starting out?
Yeah, it's I mean, this goes back to what I was talking about before with the whole sort of soft side of the business, you know, where it's easy to create the app. It's easy to bang out the code. I mean, that's the experiences that we made anyway. It was like, okay, we're building our first big app, and that was really fun. But then you break through that. So, you know, it's like the first year, you're not really spending time trying to learn how to get users. You're more spending time learning how to build an app.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get past that, you really need to be able to move into this area where you're starting to bring up the game of that app so that the user experience is there too. And that's it's almost like saying, you know, you go 80% of the way, and then it's that last 20% that will take forever if you want to get it done right. Mm-hmm. It's that final polish. And I know people will disagree to a certain extent about, you know, at what point do you launch an MVP, and or at what point do you say, okay, this can wait for a later date. I guess from my perspective, it's something that the whole onboarding process for new users, the landing page, all these different things that have come to be expected, just play such an important role if you want to stand out as an app today. So it's almost like all these things need to be part of your MVP to begin with. Hmm. Even if you don't have the best of design, that whole sort of, I mean, the micro copy and everything just needs to feel right. And that's something that it almost feels like a lot of the time you'll see an app that tries to solve a particular problem, and it probably does that from a technical point of view, but none of this the scaffolding, or you know, the front end code or the micro copy or anything around it is really compelling enough to want you to say, okay, yeah, this sounds great.
So the hard part is convincing people that it matters.
Yeah, it's this kind of build quality that people have just come to expect, you know, because you look at apps, the fight on the app market today, it's all about user experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to what extent people expect things to just be intuitive, work really well, be transparent, you know, no dark patterns, no weird, no large forms to fill out. Things should just connect automatically. And these things are just expected. You look at a lot of video games today, some of them just have great onboarding processes whereby they really teach and educate the user every step of the way as to what you need to do,
mm-hmm.
How you need to execute it, so that you're always feeling comfortable, you're always feeling engaged, motivated to do things, as opposed to just being thrown the technology at you and say, okay, here, you know, go do your thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I think, I mean, that's an interesting perspective because, I mean, I think one thing is that if you can flip that and find people first, that might change things. Because if you find people first and they have a particular pain, they might be more forgiving if you're saying, like, I'm going to solve this thing, and they're saying, yes, please, like, solve this thing. And you say, well, I'm only going to be able to go 80% of the way there to start. They might still be willing to say, okay, well, 80% is better than nothing, for example.
Yeah, definitely. I think for early adopters, that's certainly, like, a true statement. We've seen it with our you know, with Happy Tables, too, whereby we had a lot of users that used WordPress previously and then switched to our system.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they, you know, they had that early buy-in and they were early adopters, but the people that followed after, the people that, you know, they never heard of the story, they just landed on Happy Tables yesterday or before yesterday or whenever. You know, what's their first impression? What are they? What are they seeing as the added value? And it's, you know, what's the build quality telling them about this product?
Yeah, no, I think that
after 5 minutes or after 20 minutes or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a good perspective, actually, because there is this high expectation, and it'll depend on the audience, too. But yeah, I can see that. Like, if someone uses your product for 5 minutes and it's not compelling enough to keep going, then you've essentially lost that person, and they might never try again.
Right, and it's just becoming more and more complicated in terms of the technology that we use to build websites, yet people are always expecting them to cost less, apps to cost less, everything to cost less and be easier, whereby you know, we still kind of agree on how to deal with adaptive images, for instance, but now we're trying to find all these hacks for it. There's so much stuff that happens on the front end that we're having to do, you know, 100 times over than we used to, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It's just that much harder. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough position to be in when you're competing against, you know, such high quality everywhere around you. You know, it just takes that much more time to build the compelling aspect of your app as opposed to just the technology that solves the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Noel, I'd love to keep chatting, but we're out of time. Cool. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet?
At Noel Talk on Twitter.
At That's Noel Talk.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And if anybody has questions, they can just fire them right on Twitter. No problem at all.
Beautiful. Great. Well, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Justin. Hope you have a great day.
My name is Justin Jackson, and I do the show every week, but I don't necessarily know who you are. I want to hear from you, why you're listening, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. You can get me on Twitter at MIJustin, or you can email the show at productpeople@bizbox.ca. You can also follow the show on Twitter at productpeopleTV. The best way to join the Product People community is to join our email newsletter list. You can get there by going to productpeople.tv/newsletter. Please check out our sponsors, No Ads. Go to productpeople.tv/ads. Shopify, go to productpeople.tv/Shopify. And Sprintly, go to www.sprint.ly. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.